This episode of Slightly Offsides is brought to you by Better Edge, the legal way to bet socially with no fees. Better Edge is an amazing platform that has most sports. We're talking about all the big sports, as well as college football and basketball, MLS, PGA, and European soccer. The lines are better than what you'll get at most any other sports book. Your spreads and your over-unders will go plus and negative, as well as you can also live trade your bets as they're happening. So if you have a horrible bet and you want to get rid of it mid-game and save some capital, you can do that with Better Edge. I got the opportunity to try it out, and now you're going to be able to do that too. Head on over to betteredge.com and get a free $10 right now when you sign up using the code OFFSIDES. That's OFFSIDES at betteredge.com, BETTOR edge.com. Play the game without getting played.
Welcome to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome back, everybody, for another off-season check-in with Slightly Offsides, presented by Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. Just going to be Mike tonight. Dre is out with food poisoning, so prayers up for the co-host. But we do have a special guest with us tonight, Notre Dame aficionado Steve from the Four Horsemen podcast. Steve, before we get into all things Fighting Irish, why don't you just go ahead and shout you and your boys out. Tell us what Four Horsemen's all about.
Yeah, thank you. So back in 2018, just a couple of idiots screaming into the void on Twitter about college football. We all found one another, me and my contemporary P-Wag, and we've gone back a couple of years as followers, and we've actually, we live geographically close, so we've met up and hung out a couple times. And then Dylan, my other contemporary, he's up in Canada, originally from kind of the West and out in Alberta, I believe, but now he's in Montreal. But so, yeah, we're all on Eastern Standard Time, all just kind of linked up. And we said, hey, you know, we all like each other's takes and everyone kind of gives a different, you know, look at the program. So what do you do as a male in your 20s? You start a podcast. So here we are a couple of years later. Out of the three seasons we've done, Notre Dame's made the playoffs for two of them. So we're hitting at a pretty good percentage since starting the podcast. We don't like to take direct credit for it, but
a little implied there.
There might be a correlation, I'm just saying. And yeah, that's kind of what got us here as we're heading into our fourth season and hopefully our most successful one yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys are Fighting Irish fans out there and you're listening to this podcast, Four Horsemen is the way to go. So thanks for joining, Steve. And let's get right into it with, I think, one of the most intriguing things to me from Notre Dame is the quarterback situation going into next year. So there was a lot of hype on Drew Pine when he came in. There's a lot of hype on Tyler Buchner when he came in. Kind of had an opportunity to see both of them play a little bit of relief behind Jack Cohn last year. What is your take on the QB situation heading into next year, and who do you think sets Notre Dame better up for success?
I do think that ultimately, to answer the last question first, it would probably be Tyler Buchner. I think there's just some explosiveness there. He's got a little bit bigger of a frame, and man, he can run quite aggressive, and it really does open up a lot of dynamic to the team and to the offense, and would ultimately give the Hog Mollies up front room to push around the defense and give the backs some room to scat around. So that's ultimately where, you know, kind of like the ending point of where I think everything is going to go. But Tyler Buchner should absolutely not take anything for granted. He had a phenomenal sophomore year in high school. He had over 5,000, all-purpose yards and like over 50 touchdowns. He was phenomenal out in California. He went to Helix, same high school as Reggie Bush. So I mean, he played on the big stage, but then he blew out his ACL his junior year, and then his senior year was lost to COVID. So last year, as a true freshman on Notre Dame's campus, that was the first time he'd been playing meaningful snaps of football since a sophomore in high school, which is kind of insane to think about. So, there was some, there were some moments that we wish we had back from him. A couple of interceptions. I'm thinking, he got hit pretty hard and gave up a soft interception against Cincinnati, and then also against Virginia Tech, if I remember correctly. And then, Cone had to kind of bail out the game there. So there's some development that Buckner is going to have to go through. And Pine absolutely had some moments and flashes of brilliance and seemed to be a little bit more mature getting through his reads. But I ultimately think that the better athlete is looking to go into camp with that, at least the lead in regards to who should be starting. But, if coach is doing himself a service and everyone on the team a quality service, he'll give both guys first team looks and let them truly battle it out. And that's what I'm excited for is, hopefully the cream of the crop is going to rise to the top.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you make about Buckner, because that was something that was really interesting to me when I was reading about him coming into this week, is that, Notre Dame faithful, they were really hyped when he kind of came to Notre Dame. And there was a lot of, I think, quick judgments within the fan base when he struggled early. And a lot of people didn't realize, like, hey, look, this guy hasn't played organized football in like 2 years. And now he's playing at one of the premier programs in college football. Obviously, there's going to be a learning curve. Obviously, being young, being a freshman last year, there's a little bit of an adjustment and raw development that needs to go. I think after looking through film, first of all, I think it's really interesting that he was characterized as a pro-style quarterback coming through high school, because that's not the vibe at all that you get from him. Kind of like you mentioned, the explosiveness, just the raw speed, his creativity running the ball. I was shocked that he was a pro style quarterback on 247. I do think he is more dynamic. I think the wheels that he brings to the table will add another dimension that maybe we haven't seen in Notre Dame's offense for a little bit, but I do agree with you. I think Pine is more polished as a passer, at least from what I took away. And I think he deals with pressure better. It'll be interesting though. Do you think, I guess the question I'll pose to you, do you think there's any possible situation where Notre Dame runs like a two quarterback look next year?
Nothing's out of the question. Obviously it was Brian Kelly's team for 12 out of 13 games this year. And Kelly, as he's done in the past with Tommy Reese and Everett Golson and Malik Zaire, and there's been plenty of guys jumping back and forth, Brandon Wimbush to the Ian Book and that kind of transition. Phil Jerkovich was like the two yard line specialist when he was here. So, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but a lot of that has been done previously by a coach no longer here. I think with Marcus Freeman, he'll probably just want to stick with one guy for continuity and for leadership. But again, you can't really take anything off the table because expectations are high, despite it being a first-time head coach, a first-year head coach. This is the best and the healthiest that the Notre Dame program has been at in a while. We had over 100 wins over the past decade. So it's our time, with our recruiting classes, with this roster makeup, with now kind of some of the coaches falling into place, we prospectively got our guys. So, there's no rebuild. It's rebuild on the fly and win right now. So ultimately, I would like to see just one starter and one guy and for continuity. But also the flip side of that is whatever coach thinks is going to let this team win football games here and now, because we can't afford an 8-4 season. It's 11-1 at minimum or bust.
I agree with that. I have, as an Ohio State fan, I have a little bit too much experience with the multiple quarterback sets, and it doesn't, especially when you have guys like in this scenario with Buckner and Pine who have different skill sets. It's almost like you're teaching the O-line and the rest of the offense two different offenses. It really kind of fragments your team. So I agree with you. I think they definitely should stick with one guy. I also probably agree Buckner is probably the guy to go for me as well, just with the dynamic ability he adds and the fact that he's a year younger than Pine. It'll be interesting to see if Buckner gets the job, if Pine decides to reevaluate his options or not, given the way that college football is nowadays. But you mentioned Marcus Freeman a lot. You've been talking about the coaching. So I think that's one of the biggest overhauls, in a sense, that really took over this offseason for Notre Dame, and especially the promotion from Marcus Freeman right? From DC to head coach. Let's talk about that for a second. Let's start there. There was like a little bit of a delay there, I think. And it was almost like people were kind of like, why are they not just immediately giving it to Marcus Freeman? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there was speculation about Fickell, who ultimately did just re-sign with Cincinnati for a substantial extension. And to be clear, if we had gotten Luke Fickell and then had Marcus Freeman underneath him, still would have been pretty pumped. But it just feels like, you know, even when we hired Marcus Freeman as the DC, it always felt like from the very beginning, this guy is polished. This guy recruits. This guy connects. This guy can coach his ass off. There's a reason why he had such a distinguished name from Cincinnati, not really a power team traditionally, at least in the last couple of years, they've kind of rebuilt. And they've rebuilt through an incredible defense and an incredible secondary. And that's the way the game is nowadays. It's a passing offense, right? And you think of Sauce Gardner and some of the other guys that they have there, it's impressive that they've done more with less. So, you know, Freeman came in and we immediately were talking, you know, last year on our podcast as he signed, you know, us and the guys were kind of speculating, do you think this is Kelly's last year? Or do you think that Kelly does 2-3 more seasons? You know, we're expecting 22, 23 and 24 to kind of be, you know, like that's our window right now, just the way that the roster is, you know, kind of, you know, developed and built. So, you know, we're in win now mode. We're thinking, you know, Kelly stays another 2-3 seasons max, and then he'll probably just retire with hopefully a national championship. And then at that end, you know, after Marcus Freeman would take the reins, obviously things kind of moved a lot faster. And it was surprising to me simultaneously that it did take a while for Freeman to be kind of elevated to that next position, but it's Notre Dame. You know, they have to do their due diligence, and they have to make sure that, you know, they're going after as many parties who are interested, and pretty much a very vast majority of coaches out there are interested in the head coaching job in Notre Dame. So it did drive me nuts. I think I lost out on a combined like 25 hours of sleep that week. It was bad. Like, yeah, we were up like speaking on Twitter on what are those new like voice things or whatever. I'm an old guy, as you can tell. Yeah, we were up on those until like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, talking with a lot of fans and just getting a lot of perspective. So it was a fun time. It was a stressful time. The memes were unbelievable. Made some funny videos. The content was great. But I'm just happy that we finally have our guy.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like. You could, there was that viral video when they introduced him to the players. You could just see that the players were really excited. And you said it too. I mean, he's a very polished guy. He recruits really well, and he played at Ohio State. He played in a couple of national championships at Ohio State. He is a guy that poses a serious threat to a lot of those Midwest teams in that region, that's saying, like, especially on the defensive side of the ball, hey, I'm here to recruit. I'm going to take some really, really good recruits away from schools like Ohio State, Penn State, that have notoriously been taking over that region, as kind of Brian Kelly focused on other regions when he was recruiting. But, right, you know, we know better than anybody that a coaching staff is much more than the head coach. And what Notre Dame did was they went out and they filled the holes that they needed to, right? Obviously, with Freeman gone, they needed a DC. They went out, they got Al Golden, NFL experience, and brings a lot of veteran experience as a coach to an otherwise pretty young staff, right? We're talking Tommy Rees is 29 and Freeman's like 35 or 36. And then they went out, and I think probably the best hire in the entire offseason for them was Harry Heisten on the O-line. Absolutely. Coming back, because he was at Notre Dame and then he went to the NFL. I think he was at the Bears for 2 years or 3 years or something like that. And he's correct, back, yeah. Now. So he is a guru on the O-line. And Notre Dame is a school that has a penchant for really putting phenomenal O-line men into the NFL. So that was a phenomenal hire for them. I think this is a really good staff. Holistically, what are your thoughts and expectations for this? Is a staff that, you know, doesn't have a lot of top end experience, but in terms of assistants and coordinators, you know, they bring a little bit of experience.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're going to see a team that very quickly is going to start to adjust to the new way of the game in college football. You know, the reason why Nick Saban, is elite. The reason why Alabama is elite is because you have Nick Saban in 2012 having a incredible lockdown defense in their front seven, right? And a pretty decent secondary, but their front seven was very scary. And then on offense, they had maulers on the offensive line and running backs that could run for 400 yards a game combined, right? And then nine years later, he has Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle, and he's spreading the offense out, and he has a completely new look where he has four wide receivers on the field, and they're throwing for 500 yards in the national championship game. And Nick Saban has always been ahead of the game in regards to recruiting. You think of the some of the corners and safeties that they've had. They've really shut down the passing game on defense. They've opened up the field on offense. So Saban has been able to have such sustained success because he built up your interior. That's kind of the start. You have to have a strong team inside, but then you really rapidly have to get an outside that's athletic and long and fast and can make moves and can make guys miss. And you need a quarterback that can get into the ball out there in space. So Alabama's been able to do it. As we've seen, Georgia in a lot of aspects has been able to do it. Maybe not as great of a spread offense for Georgia, but their defense could absolutely shut anybody down. Now, Brian Kelly was always trying to build a roster that could beat the 2012 Alabama football team. In the year 2019.
That's true. That's very true.
you look at when we went up against Clemson and we got waxed by Michigan, unfortunately, a couple of years ago. And just some of those tough losses that we took, it's just like we were playing two different games. I think that, and Tommy Rees is actually giving me a lot of hope. We're going to hopefully start to get the athletes through recruiting, which we have started to, with Deion Colsey and a couple other guys coming up through the system. We're getting those athletes in now. Now it's on the coaching staff to adapt into real time, get us into the most up-to-date, sort of system that's going to put us in a position to win. So I think with a young staff, the pivot is going to be a lot easier. But then you have Harry Highsand, like you said. I mean, that guy's the magic key. He is the Dante Scarnecchia of the New England Patriots, as he is to Notre Dame and our offensive line. And hopefully he's going to get us back into a position where we can really start mauling some guys, because if we can, the playoffs are calling.
Hey, listen, if you are a Wisconsin fan or a Michigan fan, do me a favor and do yourself a favor and roll back the last 3 minutes and listen to what Steve just said. All right. Stop living in 2012, spread your offenses out. Let's fullback is just another pass catcher nowadays, as Kyle Juszczyk has shown us.
Absolutely.
No more run blocking needed from the fullback position. Game has changed. But no, I think you make a lot of good points. And I think the one thing that is always a worry with the young coaching staff is getting into these big games. Obviously prep is one side of a coach, but the on the fly in-game adjustments, a lot of that's driven by instinct and experience. So do you have any worries about the youth of this coaching staff heading into some of these bigger games?
I am relieved by Al Golden being the defensive coordinator. I think he's what, like high 40s, low 50s. Oh, so he's been around the block.
Yeah, 52.
Yeah, low 50s. Yeah, so he's been around the block. He was a head coach at both Temple and had a couple of decent years in Miami before ultimately, the wheels kind of fell off a bit. But and then he's been to the NFL. He was just the linebackers coach for that brought a team to the Super Bowl. So, he's experienced. He's been around the block. He can run a team and he's seen some games. He's definitely had a lot of experience. And Marcus should absolutely depend on him and rely upon him. And simultaneously on the flip side of that, I'm more excited to see the wheels come straight off and just let Tommy Rees just have full reign, right? And you know what? Maybe he might not call the best games in the big game yet as a 29-year-old, but I'd rather him make every decision and have everything fall upon him. And he's probably not going to have an A-plus performance in every matchup, but he's going to learn and he's going to get better. And he's a guy that could be here for another 3 to 4 years. He's so young before he starts getting looks as a head coach. So you have him, take advantage of him and really grow him and let him have that experience. So on defense and offense, I honestly think that that coach can just rely on his coordinators in two different, it's a little bit different because, you got the experience on offense, but you've got the experience on defense. You're trying to, set the guys up for the future on offense. So it's a little bit different in that regard, but in both instances, it should be a little bit more hands-off and let your guys do their thing.
One of the biggest things to me, at least, that was, I would mark as a failure. And it was so shocking to me to see Alex Grinch follow Lincoln Riley to USC was the fact that you had a coach like Lincoln Riley, right? And bear with me here. I'll bring this back to Notre Dame. But yeah, you got a coach in Lincoln Riley who is very offensively minded, right? And it showed through the play of Oklahoma. And unfortunately, in my opinion, part of the reason why it showed was because Alex Grinch is a very inexperienced and not, in my opinion, a very wellly adept defensive coordinator, at least from his time in Ohio State and then going on to Oklahoma. He hasn't really proved anything to me to be like a standalone drive the entire defense kind of guy. Freeman is kind of the flip of that, right? He's defensive coordinator, very defensively minded. You know the defense is going to be great with him and Golden. I think Reese, though, is better than Grinch in that sense because he has multiple years running the offense. And now, from what I've heard, Freeman is essentially giving him the keys. And he's saying, look, you can reinvent this offense however you want to. And you got to think with Reese's age, okay, that's going to bring modernization and innovation to Notre Dame, hopefully in a really good way. So I think in that sense, that's going to be really good for Notre Dame moving forward. And I think it'll be a good example of what Oklahoma could have been if Alex Grinch was potentially a little bit better suited for that role that Lincoln Riley was giving him. So that's kind of my takeaway on that situation. I think it's a really well-built staff. It's perfectly, like you said, it's perfectly kind of built up for a dynasty, a short-term dynasty, if you will, before people start getting pulled away for other jobs. And I think one of those big things that come with a dynasty, right, is recruiting. And in the recruiting class this year shows, in my opinion, it shows the excitement for Notre Dame nationally, right? This is a top 10 class, bringing in some really, really good guys, especially places where we know Notre Dame excels at bringing in and developing really good guys, like linebacker, interior O-line. Okay, one of the biggest guys to me, and we'll talk a little bit about standouts in a second, but one guy I'm really excited about is Jalen Snead. And we talked about him a while ago on one of our episodes. I made a connection between him and Kyle Hamilton being the last guy from SEC territory that Notre Dame pulled up into South Bend. So I see a big, big potential for him. Really athletic, really fast guy. I think the only weakness in this class, in my opinion, and I'll let you speak on this, Steve, the skill positions seem to be a little bit underrepresented in this class. And I don't know if that's, Reese still getting his sea legs underneath him as an offensive coordinator in terms of recruiting or what that is. But in my opinion, I felt like the skill positions lacked a little.
Yeah, it would have looked a little bit less lackluster had CJ Williams from Los Angeles. He, kept his commitment. He was a pretty darn high four-star wide receiver, and that would have given us two of them in CJ Williams and Tobias Merriweather, who we plucked basically out of, the clutches of Oregon. So he's a talented cat, and I think there's a big big future for Toby Merriweather. But the loss of CJ hurt a lot. Ultimately, he's going to be a Lincoln Riley guy at USC. He did flip after committing to ND, so it was more impressive. It did lose a little bit of luster, but yeah, we did swing for the fences and ultimately did miss at the wide receiver position in this particular recruiting cycle. So at least we have Merriweather, who's still a really, pretty decent and solid four-star guy. And I think he's, with his body and his frame, he's like 6'4", 6'5". He's a track star. So he does project to be pretty damn talented and could probably get on the field sooner than expected. But with him being the only guy, the only wide receiver, that's kind of a swing and a miss. But Jadarian Price, remember that name, you know, the running back. We got him out of the state of Texas. He's I think he's a lot better than advertised. He's a mid to low four star, but he is a four star nonetheless. But I think that he's actually going to project to be pretty damn good, especially with this unbelievable offensive line class that Notre Dame just signed as well.
Yeah, I think you stole one of my future questions here about Jadarian Price. So good job. I really like him as well. I've been watching a lot of his film for the past couple of years. He has one of those potentials, like you said, really better than advertised. And if he gets in a really good room, which I think Notre Dame has a penchant for developing some of your, maybe not your blue chip recruits, but turning them into blue chip NFL prospects, right? You think Kyren Williams, you think I'm blanking.
Josh Adams.
There you go. So guys like that, there's a history at Notre Dame for turning running backs into really good NFL prospects. And I think Jadarian Price is the next guy in line. I think he will be a really nice second fiddle to Chris Tyree if he can get meaningful snaps. Let's see. I hope he does. I'm really excited about him too. The other thing that's really kind of jumping out to me, and I just think it's funny, the tight end reign continues, it looks like, for Notre Dame with Eli Raridan. Another top five tight end, another big lanky guy that I'm sure Notre Dame is going to put pounds on. If he gets the field and you see like a two tight end wide set next year with Rees, that could be really dangerous with the size that him and Michael Mayer could bring to the outside for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I would love for him to be on the field this year, and there's still a potential for it. It's not out of the question yet, but he did blow an ACL this past fall. He should be, you know, up and moving. An ACL these days is about 6 to 8 months, so he'll be kind of up and running by mid to late summer. So depending on his recovery, it's entirely conceivable that he's just back for, you know, late summer, you know, camp. Makes his way into a bunch of different sets. But even if Eli Raridan ends up being, you know, a project where he takes a 2-3 years to get onto the field, the upside is incredible. You know, he started as a, you know, just a middling three-star guy, and he really worked his way up and had a fantastic senior season. So he's incredible. You know, Holden Stays is from Georgia. You know, last guy we pulled out of Georgia was, and Holden actually kind of reminds me of this guy, would be Tommy Tremble, who got drafted in the third round to the Carolina Panthers. You know, someone who's probably a little bit more fit for almost like an H-back style, that can actually run block pretty well. So we got a pretty damn good run block guy slash H-back, and he can definitely catch the ball in his own right and hold and stays. And then you have the, you know, the big guy that you can send vertical in the seam or out in a flag route in someone like Eli Raridan. So either way, I you know, again, this is two really big guys that can move piles in terms of the blocking, and they can also be wreak havoc on defenses once they get the ball in their hands. So it's exciting that, you know, we just keep rolling with tight end prospects through South Bend.
It's a really, really good class. And I think the weakness in the skill positions can be hidden this year because there's a lot of returning talent out wide for Notre Dame. So another year in the program for guys like, you know, Braden Lindsey, and I don't think it's time for panic. I do think it definitely needs to be a position of focus for them next year in their recruiting class. So in the 23 cycle, they definitely should focus on some skill positions. And I think that would also signal that shift that you're talking about to a more modernized offense, focusing on those skill positions. But again, great class. Can't complain with a top 10 class. Can't complain with a lot of four stars and 1 5-star. So bringing those guys in, and then you bring in an elite kind of just Kyle Hamilton 2.0, like probably the best you could get to replace this guy in Brandon Joseph. How does it feel to you next year with returning talent, a lot of returning talent on defense, a lot of returning talent on offense? What are your thoughts on the roster going into next year?
Yeah, I mean, the defense, it's going to be scary, man, especially, you know, now this is going to be 2 years with full-blown development from, you know, of the system of Marcus Freeman. And then now you have Al Golden that's going to be able to coach these guys up all year. I mean, on the defensive line, both Adam Ulola twins, Jason and Justin, are both coming back for their fifth year. They're both redshirted seniors, so they're strong. Both guys were wreaking havoc last year. A lot of forced fumbles, a lot of sacks, tackles for loss. Isaiah Foskey coming back for his true junior season. His redshirted senior season. True senior, redshirted junior season. I was going to get that one eventually. he could have definitely gone to the draft, but he ended up coming back for definitely his last year, and he'll probably be a high second or first round pick next year. So the defensive line is extremely deep. The linebackers, I don't think there's as much star power at the linebacker position now than what's going to, you know, come into the play in the future. I think our linebackers in about two seasons from now are going to be absolutely terrifying for other teams to play. But what we do have is depth, right? So, you know, one of the issues that we had last year on defense was a lot of injuries, and we ended up going into our third or fourth linebacker in certain positions. And you could see that there was a drop off in consistency. Still a lot of talent, but just not as consistent. I think that's not going to be the case this year, because a lot of guys have a lot of experience at the linebacker position. So they're not going to be incredible by any means. Like, their talent's not going to burst off the screen at you, but what you're going to see is a very, very solid play and not making any mistakes, a very sound defense. And then on the back end, the secondary, I mean, Brandon Joseph, DJ Brown, Houston Griffiths, Cam Hart, Tyreek Bracey, Clarence Lewis, and Ryan Barnes, Bo Barnes, who I think is really going to actually break out and have himself a hell of a camp. I mean, you can rotate those guys in and out and in pretty much any position, whether it's at safety or corner, whether they're out wide or in the slot. Any of them, I think, are definitely talented enough to stop any. It pretty much shut down any college offense. Maybe not like the top five offenses. And it's going to be curious to see how we can handle ourselves on the road in the horseshoe this year, but they project to be pretty damn good. And the continuity of having a senior leader back there with Joseph coming in, albeit a transfer, that's going to be huge after we lost arguably the greatest player that we've ever had in Notre Dame history and Kyle Hamilton. There's definitely an argument to be made there.
Yeah, certainly. No, he was a phenomenal talent. One of the great things with having a super talented defense is it gives your offense more time to figure things out, really figure out what the identity of that team is. So that hopefully over this offseason, it'll take a lot of pressure off of Tommy Rees and that quarterback battle and just let those offensive guys take a breath and find their kind of identity for 2022 under what probably should be a top 10 or top 5 defense that Notre Dame is probably lining up with next year. It's an absolutely scary team. Before we kind of go into the schedule aspect of next year, I do have a really intriguing transfer theoretical hypothetical thing to pose to you, because I saw it today when I was doing some of the last preliminary reading for this podcast, and it was an article that was titled "Quarterbacks That Might Transfer If They Lose Like the QB1." And so one of the biggest shocks, I would say, for returning quarterbacks this offseason was Sean Clifford at Penn State, because you have an insanely talented guy in Drew Aller coming in. And you have Sean Clifford, who would have been coming into his sixth year, announcing that he was going to return for his final year of eligibility. Now, if he gets beat out, do you think it would be conceivably a good thing or a bad thing if he happened to find himself in South Bend come fall time?
That's a hard question to answer, because it's simultaneously a good thing and a bad thing. And I think that's actually kind of indicative of ultimately what the transfer portal is becoming. If you want to get more macro with it. And I think I'm pro transfer portal, to be clear. We're definitely, you know, pro player and player movement and empowerment. So, make no bones about that. But the good about it would be very experienced guy, played in a lot of big time games, big program. He's played under the lights and in front of literally several hundred thousand people. He can rise to the moment. He's experienced. He'll probably be able to go through his reads and especially pre-snap against the blitz, which Notre Dame had a terrible problem against last year. So he could probably just be a little bit better at reading the field and making smarter plays. I think that Buckner is ultimately a more dynamic guy, but you're definitely going to get probably about the same, if not equal, or maybe even slightly better production from him if he were to transfer over to Notre Dame. So would I be happy in that regard, which is we're going to be at least the same as if we started Buckner, if not better? Yeah, that's great, because again, we're kind of in this win now, the window is open, like go all in sort of thing. Now, simultaneously, you know, the window is going to be open for a couple of years here, conceivably, knock on as much wood as humanly possible. but, you know, and in that case, you know, with a true sophomore in Tyler Buckner, and Tyler Buckner's probably not leaving after his junior season, you could prospectively have him as a 3-year starter. And 3-year starter in college football at his level, with this defense, with some of the offensive guys coming up, yeah, it's like you could really develop this Buckner cat. Yeah, maybe you guys go 10-2 this year with Buckner, where you might have had a chance to go 12-0, but then you get waxed in the playoff game this year. Whereas, you know, next year or the year after, with lots of experience for Buckner and him able to really find his own, you might be looking at it, you know, an undefeated 14-0 season. So, who knows? It's so hard to kind of make that calculation. Is, you know, do you win now or do you try to build something up for the future? Again, it's a pretty interesting conversation in regards to what the transfer portal now brings to the table here, because I think it's actually going to be one of the great equalizers of the sport and able to ultimately prop up traditionally lesser programs. You know, if you're Nebraska, they lost, what, 9 games last year by less than a touchdown? Think about if they get a handful of transfers in.
Yes,
yeah, 5th and 6th year guys.
Statistically speaking, Nebraska was one of the most unlucky teams in college football history last year. And they're already ahead of what you're saying, because they pulled in, I think Casey Thompson transferred there from Texas. So they get a talented quarterback. But I completely agree with you in that sense. I really liked your take on it. It was something I just wanted to throw out there and get your visceral reaction on. Because it was just, when I saw it, I was like, whoa, that'd be something pretty wild if it happened. But okay, so the last big topic that I wanted to touch on with you is the 2022 schedule. So I'm looking at it right now, and I haven't looked at a lot of schedules yet for next year. Notre Dame always, because they have so much freedom with their schedule, you tend to expect to see a lot of heavy hitters. Now this year though, it looks pretty intense. You've got potentially what I see as 4 top 15 matchups throughout the year. And of those 4, I would say 3 of them are on the road, right? You've got Ohio State, which frankly, for both programs, I think we can both agree on this, is a very dangerous game for both programs to have as the very first game of the season, because Ohio State is trying to figure out their defense. Notre Dame is, you know, essentially transitioning eras here. This is a dangerous game to have to start out the year for both teams. So that right off the bat is a brutal game. Then you've got away at BYU as well. You have home at Clemson. There's also North Carolina in there. And then the big boy at the very end against the Trojans. So what are your like reasonable expectations given the way that the schedule is set up? Because I know we've talked about win now, right? This is a really tough schedule, especially by Notre Dame's lofty standards.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to focus on the big four, and I think, you know, UNC is on the rise, but ultimately with the loss of Howell, they're going to probably take a step back, maybe an 8-4 program. So focusing on the big four of on the road at Ohio State, neutral site game in Las Vegas against BYU, at home at night against Clemson in November, and then on the road against USC to end the season. I expect them to win two of those four games, minimum. So that you're looking at 10-2 is like your baseline expectation of this year. There's no reason that this program with these coaches, with these players, with, you know, the pieces falling into place. Again, we're not, you know, falling off hard with the loss of Kelly and with a bunch of recruits leaving. You know, we lost basically all, for all intents and purposes, one in CJ Williams and, you know, another guy that was like a low three star. You still have a ton of talent on this team, a ton of experience. You have unbelievable coaching. You've won, you know, you've been to two playoff appearances and you've been to a New Year's Six bowl game in the last, you know, three times in the last 5 years. Now's your chance. Now is your chance that you have to continue to show up on the big stage, because if these coaches can prove that they belong, you're going to get recruits. And if you continue to get recruits like we did in this last class with all those linebackers, and then with the next class, you have, you know, the 2023 class, we have an incredible defensive line that's incoming. And again, some more linebacker help on the way. It's like, they're getting dangerous very quickly. And if you can go into Columbus, and if you can go into Los Angeles and you know, blow out Lincoln Riley's USC, yeah, you announce to the world who you are, and you say, hey, you know what? We might have not been able to get it done with Kelly in some of the big games in years past, but you know, that this isn't your grandfather's Notre Dame. You know, this is a whole new ball game here, and you know, we're here to play. So I think that we're looking at more likely than not an 11-1 season. I do see a loss on the schedule, just given some inexperience, but 11-1 is absolutely my expectation.
Well, listen, Steve, if we had held this podcast at this exact time last year, okay, and you, instead of being a Notre Dame fan, you're an Oregon fan, okay, we were having this conversation, I would have probably said, as most people would say, like, you're just not winning that one in Columbus. Like, it is so hard to go into Columbus against an Ohio State team and beat them. Now, what Oregon did against Ohio State this year, okay, that shows that it's possible, right? It can happen. So, like, now, do I think that Notre Dame wins that game? I don't know. I'm biased. I can't give an honest opinion. They're both very, very influx teams right now. I think it's way too early to tell, especially Ohio State. We don't know what kind of defense Ohio State's going to have, right? First game next year. Obviously, we expect much better from Jim Knowles, but we don't know. On the Notre Dame side, there is a lot more knowns, but again, you know, quarterback play is going to be a question in that very first game. I do agree with you, though. I think the UNC game is going to be a lot easier than it's been in the past couple of years for them. I think BYU as well. I think they should have no problem with BYU. Clemson would shock me if Clemson, I think we're starting to get a little bit past the Clemson era. Clemson just has a lot of things that they need to figure out next year. So I really like Notre Dame in that game, especially at home. And then USC, man, listen, if Lincoln Riley does anything close to what he did in USC, as he did in Oklahoma, all you need is a defense. All you need is a defense. Like, you don't really need an offense because he's not going to have a defense. So I'm not worried about that game if I'm a Fighting Irish fan. And by the early looks of it, you know, he's bringing Alex Grinch with him. So really the only thing you have to worry about is the fact that it's rivalry week and it's going to be in LA. I'm not worried, though.
I think honestly Notre Dame has to make four stops in that game. Make two stops in the first half and you make two stops in the second half, you're probably winning and covering the spread. USC, they'll definitely have a bright future, and it's exciting to have, you know, kind of them, as much as I dislike the program, it's good to have them, you know, back in kind of the swing of things in college football. It's good for college football. It's good for Notre Dame and our rivalry. But I want to see them get strong, but not too strong. You know, let little brother know where they're at. So
strong until you play them, right? Strong until you play.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think they are ultimately probably two seasons away from really competing at the national stage, but they're going to instantly be better. And it's not going to be something that we can overlook at all, especially on the road close out, hopefully at that point in 11-0 season.
I think the two biggest games and probably the hardest game for them to win is probably going to be the Ohio State game. I think by USC, we will have a very good indication of what kind of Trojan team that is. And I think Notre Dame, if their defense, you know, steps on the field in that game, that should be, you know, it shouldn't be too bad for them. So I think, yeah, I think the biggest weaknesses in terms of the schedule there, but still very tough schedule. And with those many big games, there's always the possibility for a trap game, right? So I think the key for Freeman and the staff will be to keep them focused and not have them looking ahead to the big game after big game. But the last question I wanted to pose to you here before we wrap up is kind of this notion of these big games, right? Because it's no secret when you think about Notre Dame's recent history on the national spotlight, it has been one that is not as rosy as the Notre Dame faithful and history books would like to see. The college football playoff appearances, while they have been very good for the program in terms of keeping itself prestige, the outcomes of those games have been, you know, less than favorable for Notre Dame fans. And then last year, of course, was very, very rough second half. What do you think it will take in this new era under Freeman, Reese, all those guys? What do you think it'll take for Notre Dame to get to that next level, get to that next step, maybe make it to a national championship game, or heck, just, you know, I don't want to be mean, but like, just don't get blown out in the college football playoff.
Yeah. Well, thankfully we didn't get blown out against Oklahoma State, but the bad news is we lost a game that we absolutely should have won by 3 touchdowns. And that one honestly might've hurt the most, because like I was heading into halftime, like happy drinking for once watching a Notre Dame game instead of sad drinking. So, it is also important to put into context, you know, some of the big games that Notre Dame has lost over the years. I would say one of the ones that really sucked was the LSU loss. Mm-hmm. In that game, you know, that one was almost inexcusable because I felt like they were similarly situated. But 2012, that Alabama football team had 23 NFL players on their roster. You know, AJ McCarron, Eddie Lacy, TJ Yeldon, Kenyon Drake, Amari Cooper, Chance Warmack on the offensive line, haha, Clinton Dix, Landon Collins, CJ Mosley. Then you have the 2015, you know, Fiesta Bowl. Not only does our star, you know, linebacker blow out his knee, you know,
that was like the second play of the game. Yeah, that was like the second play of the game.
Exactly. But I mean, again, that 2015 Ohio State game team, to give you a compliment, arguably one of the greatest teams in history, just talent-wise. I mean, they didn't win the national championship, but like, you know, 36 NFL players, including Zeke, Michael Thomas, Terry McLaurin, Joey Bosa, you know, like the names go on and on. Marshawn Lattimore, Von Bell, Eli Apple, Denzel Ward, like incredible, incredible talent. And then, you know, 2018, 2019, Georgia, we did our home and home. They had, you know, that's an SEC program that ultimately had 8 NFL players. 2018 Clemson, 9 NFL players, including, again, obviously Trevor Lawrence. And then 2020, you had Alabama that had 6 first round draft picks. Yeah, like Mac Jones, Devonta, Patrick Sertan, the whole squad was incredible. So yes, Notre Dame has had an issue losing big matchups. To put it into context, it's traditionally against some of the greatest teams that have ever been assembled in college football history. So that is one thing worth noting. But also, why are we getting left behind? It's because of recruiting. Yeah, there's obviously, with recruiting at Notre Dame, it's a little bit harder because there's more of an academic element to it. It's harder to sell South Bend, Indiana in the winter than it is to sell Miami or, you know, Georgia.
Absolutely.
Or Texas or USC. So, you know, there are some things that inherently work against it. We didn't exactly have, you know, I named a bunch of players that are NFL superstars right now. Now, there's definitely been a lot of great NFL talent coming through South Bend in the last couple of years, but not nearly as high profile, sustainable, all pro, like real huge names that pop off at you as some of the names that I just mentioned. You know, Michael Thomas leading the league in receptions a couple of years ago. And you know, you can just go down that list. And you know, Mac Jones, his first year with the Patriots being highly successful. So yeah, there's just some Notre Dame just needs to have names that come out of their program and get guys onto campus that in a couple of years from now are going to be able to put up numbers like Jaylen Waddle, are going to be able to be feared in the NFL, you know, like Brian Anderson's going to be when he moves on from Alabama to the NFL, right? You need that high end talent, because if Notre Dame had Kyren Williams and Kyle Hamilton playing in our bowl game, we absolutely just flat out do not lose that game to Oklahoma State. We were so much better than them. It just didn't turn out that way for us. So you could see that we had the talent discrepancy in our favor. Just some things just didn't quite work out the way that the new world is with guys sitting out. But you know, you think, and it's always for us, it is always the flip side when we play other teams. It's always Notre Dame is a very, very, very good program, even great, but there's just that difference of 2 to 3 playmakers on the field for the opposing team, whether it's Clemson, Alabama, or whoever, that is just unbelievable. And that's what we need on our campus. So that if I could highlight one thing, that's the difference.
I think that makes the most sense. I think that's a really good, very astute point you make there. And hopefully under Freeman, we've already seen it a little bit, but hopefully that continues to improve for Notre Dame and they can take that next step. But Steve, thank you so much for coming on and talking Notre Dame football with us. We know you love to do that. We're very happy to give you another outlet to do it. And listeners out there, if you want to stay up to date with the Fighting Irish, or you just want to learn about a team that probably has one of the most prestigious, richest blue blood college histories of all, okay, these fellas are your ticket to do that. Okay, you can follow them on Twitter, Horseman Pod. Do you guys have an Instagram as well?
We do have Instagram, also at Horseman Pod. I run the Instagram and I'm not able to update that as much, so Instagram is a little bit weak, admittedly, but still follow. But Twitter, I will give it to my two contemporaries, Mr. P Wagon, who is kind of our film savant, and he's a special teams lover and appreciator. And then Dylan, you know, he loves and appreciates college football history. And you know, it's pretty cool to see that a bunch of different styles of tweeting are coming from one account, because you never know who you're getting. So if you like college football, if you like mixing it up on Twitter, that's the best place to find us. And that's where we post all of our episodes.
There you have it, folks. I couldn't have summed it up better than that. Steve, thank you so much for joining us again and representing your great podcast. Guys, check them out, if you will, on all podcasts, and make sure to check back in with Slightly Offsides next week.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.